Welcome to Twist, This Week in Sea Turtles.
So, I'd like to welcome everybody to the second episode of This Week in Sea Turtles. On the line, we have Manjula Tiwari from San Diego, who works with NOAA, and sitting with Manjula is Earl Possert, who works for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And Earl, tell me what your position is again.
I coordinate the International Marine Turtle Program for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Happy to be here.
And also on the line, and this is all via Skype, is Matthew Godfrey, who is the North Carolina Sea Turtle Coordinator, and I am Michael Coyne.
So before Michael, what's your title?
What am I? I am a research scientist at Duke University, and I run seaturtle.org.
Okay. And you're the president of the ISTS.
The International Sea Turtle Society. That was a problem we had last week. We used a couple of abbreviations, and we didn't explain what they were. Okay, so before we get started on this week's topic, Nick Pilcher, who is one of the co-chairs of the Marine Turtle Specialist Group, sent a clarification as a follow-up to our discussion last week about the IUCN Red List. And what I'd like to do is just read that so everybody has that information. He says, the green turtle listing was discussed with most of the key members involved in the green turtle listing review for the Mediterranean, with only one comment made in favor of keeping the listing and all others in favor of removing it until such a time as we could justify the listing. The discussion recognizes that there was still insufficient data to justify the listing. There is a key word here, justify. This was the basis for the removal. Insufficient and improper justification rather than the status of the turtles themselves. If we are to use the Red List as it was meant to be used, then there are procedures and justifications to be followed in order to list a regional population. As indicated by some of the members from the Mediterranean, there is now some possible evidence to support a regional distinction based on genetics, but this was never part of the original justification for listing. We can't be thinking that keeping it listed to help generate conservation funding is appropriate. This is not the intent of the Red List, even if it is indirectly a result of it. The vice chair for the Mediterranean region supported the removal of the listing, as did a number of other Mediterranean members, and the decision was made to remove it by myself, Rod Mast, and Jeff Semenoff. Jeff Semenoff is the Red List authority for the Marine Turtle Specialist Group. Following consultation with these folks, not independently or as is suggested as an impromptu executive decision. We also indicated that the green turtle in the Mediterranean could be considered for separate listing if the appropriate documentation was provided to support such a move. Again, it is not so much the issue of whether the listing was correct or not, it is that it was not justified. We continue to strive to get the Red List process correct. The review of the Hawksbill turtle assessment is nearly complete, and reviews for the green and olive ridley will commence shortly. Regional assessments have also been carried out for the Mediterranean. I hope this clarifies the inaccuracies of the verbal discussion held recently on Twist. So, I feel pretty good about this because this means we've generated some discussion, which was exactly the intent of what we did last week. You guys have any comments about that?
This was sent to the MTSG membership, this email?
It was sent to the MTSG membership and also to Sea Turtle, the mail list Sea Turtle, so pretty much everybody should have gotten a copy of this.
Okay.
Right, and I think it would have been better if this message had come prior to the decision being made. I just think consultation with a group on issues that are made on behalf of the group should take place before, not after, decisions are made.
And probably the best course from here is to try to get Nick or somebody like that on to have a discussion about this specifically. So we will try to do that for future episodes.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so for this episode, we have, as I said, Earl Possert is here with us, and one of the things we want to talk to Earl about is the Marine Turtle Conservation Act. And Earl, can you give us a little bit of history about the Marine Turtle Conservation Act?
Okay. Basically, the Marine Turtle Conservation Act was an outcome of some very dedicated NGOs that tried to help the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service have a dedicated fund for international marine turtle conservation. As things were prior to 2004 and the passage of this act, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had to fund international marine turtle projects out of its domestic endangered species recovery fund. and therefore we were constantly competing with many high priority projects that were underfunded already within the United States. So nothing was very reliable, and funding was very limited for international projects. Then the Ocean Conservancy and the World Wildlife Fund took the lead and worked with the Congress to develop the legislation that was modeled after similar legislation we have for other foreign species like great apes and elephants and tigers and rhinos, neotropical migrants. Because these funds already established and administered by the Fish and Wildlife were so popular and successful, actual fund was established in 2004 with the passage of the act by Congress and signing of the act by President Bush. The first year funding was for the year fiscal year 2005, which began October 1, 2004.
So you said that this funding is specifically for nesting beach projects, right?
The intent of the act is to focus on nesting beach populations. And part of that reason is that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service has split jurisdiction over the conservation of marine turtles, with National Marine Fisheries focusing on marine turtle conservation issues in the marine environment, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service delegated the role of addressing issues on nesting beaches. And since the National Marine Fisheries Service already had a not insignificant budget for dealing with marine turtle issues because of a lot of the fishery interaction issues that raise the political profile, they've been more adequately funded than the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And so that was the intent of this legislation, was to fill that niche a little better.
So if someone sends in a proposal to do some in-water mouth recapture study on nesting turtles that are hanging out in the water just off the nesting beach, that project would not qualify.
That's not true. Actually, it would qualify. It just wouldn't be a high priority for funding right now with the limited funding. The Act does allow for us to fund projects that would be in-water projects, near-shore projects, on foraging grounds, things like that. But the priority and the major intent of the legislation is to focus on nesting beach populations, on the nesting beaches and nesting beach habitat. And as long as we have limited funding, we have to set our priorities there, or we would be really sending the very wrong message to Congress. Having said that, I would like to say one additional thing. The fact that we're getting a number of proposals for in-water projects has actually been a very good thing, because, for instance, in the past year, for 2006, we had about 78 proposals submitted. 15 or 20 of those were for in-water projects, just roughly. Even though we couldn't put them near the top for funding, many of them were excellent projects. And when we go back and report to Congress, we could tell them that we have $1.8 million worth of funding grant requests of very good projects, and we were only able, with a 2006 funding, fund about $630,000 worth of projects. So there's a much greater need out there. And so these project submissions, even though they didn't get funded, they're actually helping marine turtle conservation by sending a message to our congressmen that there are great needs out there. And
So last year it was funded for $100,000, and this year for $700,000, is that right?
For the fiscal year 2005, it was $100,000 funded. We supported 7 projects around the world, and in 2006, we have funded 25 projects around the world for about $630,000.
Can you give us a few examples of the kinds of projects that were funded?
Yes, I can. There was some... there are many excellent projects around the world, so I'm not, by selecting these, I'm not saying the others were not of equal merit and importance, but a couple that stick out are, for instance, the West African leatherback population, as many of us know, has not been getting adequate attention, and there are many concerns about its status and the pressures on the nesting beaches and in the marine environment. There were a number of NGOs working very industriously and with great dedication on the nesting beaches in Gabon and some of the other adjoining countries, but the work was not being as well coordinated. It was not as good communication as there needed to be, and the priorities, needs were not very well clear and established. So the Marine Turtle Act was able to, in the first year, fund some aerial surveys of the nesting population in Gabon, and also organize meeting of all the government and NGO players in Gabon and some of the adjoining countries to get better organized and establish priorities. They did this, and in the second year, they were able to submit an additional grant request, which was funded at a higher level of about $100,000, to actually implement expanded on-the-ground conservation of nesting beaches in Gabon. That's, you know, one example where this act has been able to I think, support some much-needed work that might not otherwise have started. We are also supporting work in the Western Hemisphere in Nicaragua on hawksbill nesting beaches, in Panama on the premier nesting beach for hawksbill, Chirpy Beach. We're supporting work there that to reestablish, or I should say recover, the very heavily exploited hawksbill population that used to be the largest in the Caribbean. In Oman, we're working with the large loggerhead population there. And I can go on. I mean, you want the whole list.
That's good. I'll go ahead and mention this now, is I'm gonna.
I could say also we did support, like the International Sea Turtle Society, we provided support for travel grants in the name of capacity building.
Right.
Because the act does allow for us to help capacity build around the world, and trying to help more international conservationists get to this meeting is certainly fits in that vein. We also supported the Indian Ocean Southeast Asia meeting that was held in Muscat, Oman last March. So
Earl, it might be useful for our listeners to know who is eligible for this grant.
Basically, a private individual, a university researcher, a business person, a government employee, an NGO is eligible to apply. They have to demonstrate their expertise and competency in being able to carry out the project they're proposing.
So can a graduate student apply for funding?
They could. It probably would be, I mean, you know, obviously it would be better to be applying in sync with your, advisor and university that you're attending. There's no stipulation on how the application has to be sent. There may be some advantages for a graduate student in some ways that, I don't know. It may be advantageous to go through the university.
Are there any geographic restrictions on where people can be from and apply?
No. Mostly no. You can even apply from the U.S. if your work is outside the U.S., or it will have significant implications for marine turtle conservation outside the U.S., you know, for instance, maybe on some disease issue. However, there are a few countries that, unfortunately, due to the political divisions between U.S. and their country, we could not fund something in Iran directly or Cuba directly. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't support work that would benefit those populations in another format. I don't think we could fund the government of Iran or Cuba to do work there, although there are some really fine biologists there that are doing excellent work in both those countries.
And, right, that's strictly an issue between the governments, right?
But there are other ways to address those kind of needs, I think.
Earl, can you speak a little bit about the committee that reviews these proposals and what are you looking for geographical representation or any things like that?
The people that are on the panel that review the grants are government scientists, biologists, and people that work within our international program. Most of them have sea turtle experience in their background, extensive sea turtle experience. We have somebody from the National Marine Fisheries Service on the panel. A few of the individuals don't have direct sea turtle knowledge and experience, but they have broad experience working international programs, and so they bring a different kind of experience. No one person on the panel reviews every grant except me and maybe one or two other people. People are asked to review only the grants they feel they have the competency to evaluate in terms of geography or the particular kind of research or the issues involved. And, you know, so the projects are then scored roughly and weighted appropriately. And then the panel meets and we discuss the proposals that seemed everybody agrees kind of rose to the top. And then if there are projects that some particular panel member felt was a really important issue, that person has the opportunity to explain and convince everybody else why that merits also going in the group that's going to be hopefully funded. So it's not a rigidly structured process, but there is a clear process, and hopefully one that is fair, that that allows, you know, various expertise to come to bear on, and through the consultation process among us, select the best projects. I have to say it's a very tough job, because there are many, many, many more really excellent projects than we fund right now, which I hope, you know, will the situation will improve. But it's a very difficult, although enjoyable task also to see all the really good projects proposals that are out there.
Yeah. So just returning to eligibility for a second, you have proposals coming in from really big NGOs as well as small NGOs as well as individuals. And some of these large NGOs already have multi-million dollar funding from other sources. Do you think they should stand in equal chance with proposals from smaller NGOs or individuals?
I thought I answered that question, Mondo.
Just now?
No. Didn't I? That was the first. Okay. I'm sorry. I thought it was a trick question. What did I say before? Seriously, we look at the individual proposal, and who submits it does bear on the ranking it gets. However, it's not necessary, because we weighed it more for a small, struggling NGO versus a big, quote-unquote, rich NGO. We look at it in terms of, Is that NGO capable of managing the funding it's asking for? Is it capable of coming through and doing what it says it wants to do? And basically, you know, whether it has the capacity to do what it's proposing to do. That's the criteria, not whether it's a big, well-known international NGO versus a smaller local NGO. There are some very solid local NGOs, and if we know by reputation and experience that they can do what they say they're doing, they, you know, the fact that they need the money, if, you know, all things being equal, I guess you could say, then you would say, yeah, let's help the little guy versus, you know, the big corporation. But I haven't seen that has come to bear in any decision so far.
So getting back to the point that you made a second ago about not having enough money to fund all the excellent projects, do you have a sense for how much money will be available for the next round? There must be a budget already in process.
I can tell you, I think what's public information is the president's budget that went to the Hill, which I think is public information now. If
if I'm revealing something that's not, I'm sure somebody will be knocking on my door when I get back to Georgia tomorrow. But I think the president's budget included $300,000, which was what they asked for last year before Congress added additional money on it. So far, the House has acted in the appropriation process, and they put $700,000 in, which is, you know, comparable to last year. The Senate Appropriations Committee has to work, do their work, and obviously it may very well be different than what the House did, and then it'll have to go to conference. And I can tell you that the rumor is that the NGOs have lobbied the Hill for $1.2 million for turtles, and so what ultimately comes out, I think hopefully that we'll have at least what we had in 2006, but I'm always optimistic, and I'm thinking that we'll have some slight increase, which is no small thing in the budget situation on the Hill now for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We're largely getting, you know, even held to what we had last year or taking cuts and, you know, within the administration budget. And it's very hard, even for supporters on the Hill, to come up with add-on money. Money is very tight there for certain things.
Is there anything that people listening can possibly do to maybe encourage their legislators to
Well, I think I think that at this point in time, the House has done their work, and the Senate has yet to do theirs. And working for the executive branch of the government, it's not for me to tell people what they can do. Okay, or let's say it's not advisable for me to tell people what they can do. But you know, we have an informed citizen, and the people are free to contact their senators and express their views about funding levels and multi-species funds and their interests and et cetera. So, and the Ocean Conservancy and the Wildlife Funds are both doing very well at expressing the views of the conservation community, and you can contact them and they can tell you more specifically how you can, where you can.
Okay, so I can state
you can say whatever you want.
That Mary Dell Donnelly with the Ocean Conservancy recently was requesting that made a specific request for people to contact their legislators, and I think based on what you said that there's still opportunity to get in touch with senators. It's probably past the time to do it with House of Representative members, and so the Ocean Conservancy seems like it might be a good place to go to find out what you can do.
Just another point that I think we haven't covered so far in this discussion is there any inbuilt mechanism to review a project that has been funded to check whether the money is being put to good use?
Yes, there's a very formal process that comes with your award of the contract that says you will submit a mid-year and end-of-year financial statement showing how you've expended the funds relative to what you requested the funds for. And it's not that you can't divert a few pennies here and there, but if you're going to divert a few thousand for something different than what you did, you have to get approval ahead of time. So we do have that process, and also with that mid-year report, financial report, comes a progress report and an end-of-year report on the results. And I also make site visits as to the extent that I can. And you know, if you're you have a good history and you're producing good results, that bodes well for future years, because we recognize that most marine turtle projects are going to be multi-year, long-term funding investments. And it's the rare marine turtle project that, you know, it's a one-shot deal.
Right. That actually brings up a really good question. If I remember correctly, the Marine Turtle Conservation Act was, it has a five-year lifespan.
Right.
It has to be renewed. Is that correct?
Yes.
And do you have any feeling on what the prospects are that it will be continued? beyond that?
Well,
it's too early to say.
To say that, you know, the Endangered Species Act hasn't been reauthorized for like 20 years,
right.
And it gets funded every year. By virtue of the Congress putting funds, making them a line item for the Endangered Species Act and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and National Marine Fisheries Service budget, basically authorizes us to expend funds under the act. It is a kind of a de facto reauthorization. I don't anticipate this. These funds are very popular because they're fairly low budget. They're working with high visibility species, and you know, people really like them on the Hill and in the public, and they generally don't get any controversy for reauthorization. To the extent that there may be any little changes to improve upon the act or the fund, you know, that could very well happen. But I anticipate it'll get good support across the aisles, both parties, well, all the parties and non-parties. And,
all two?
All two, plus the non-party, the independent non-party. And which actually was, this, you know, initially the sponsor for this, by the way. So let's not, the independent, you know, Senator Jeffers from Vermont initially, you know, introduced this to Congress. And it didn't get through the first year. And he was an independent. And the next year, he was not the chair of the committee, and it fell to a Republican to introduce it. And he did, Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma, and he was a very strong supporter of it. And he helped on the Hill, on the House side, to gain support. So it's bipartisan. It's a relatively small amount of money, as things go. U.S. budget, and I think it'll continue to get good support and grow in funding levels, and maybe even expand someday into more kinds of turtles, which are great needs.
Boy, that's amazing that politicians from states without coastlines were so active in setting up this act.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
We had Senator Voinovich from Ohio, was one of the big, he was a Republican, and he was a very strong supporter, and yeah, it's just amazing. Mary Dale can tell very nice stories about the hearings when this legislation was being had hearings to get voted out of the conference or out of the committee, and how the different senators would speak up about their stories of their interactions with turtles at some point in their life. But either the chair of the Senate committee, the House Environment Committee, Senator Inhofe, worked or had some association with Isla Letcher from the Turtle Lady from Texas many years ago, and basically was touched by a turtle. And you know, it was just a big love. So I mean, you know, you think about what turtle projects are having impacts for turtle conservation. You just never know how the circle goes, and it came back in a very positive way for the legislation that rehab project and the education project that Isla had.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that's actually something. Whenever I get a chance, I encourage folks that are handling and working with turtles to do is to try to get the public involved and come up with some kind of public component, because you just never know. People are so affected just by being able to see a turtle and come in contact with one, because you know it's obviously such a rare occurrence.
Right.
So I've got a philosophical question. And that's it's great that the U.S. government and Fish and Wildlife Service is committed to funding international projects. But as someone who works for a state agency and who relies on fish and wildlife funds to maintain nesting beach management projects, we sort of feel like we're underfunded these days. And so we would like to see funding both nationally and internationally increase. And I was wondering if you had any comments on that.
I sympathize with you, Matthew. I worked in Sandy McPherson's job for many years when we were just getting funding for, you know, states through the Section 6 of the Endangered Species Act, and those were some good years because until they changed the formula, and now I understand many of the states don't get much funding from the Endangered Species Act because of it's basically due to the competition for so many other species. And while it is a real irony and it's a paradox that at the time our funding is increasing for international projects for marine turtles, it is actually getting tighter for doing marine turtle conservation within the U.S. So it is somewhat of a paradox. And you've been outside the country in other countries, so you won't take this personally when I say it. It's still, the situation within the U.S. is so much easier and better in terms of getting funding and carrying out projects within the U.S. than it is in many, 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 many developing countries around the world. And a little bit of money that we can spread around the world, whether it's $700,000 or $1 million, I think has a much greater impact on global marine turtle populations spent outside the U.S. than that same amount of money if we spent it within the U.S. And also, I think within the U.S., there are other alternatives, sources of, you know, either volunteers helping, you know, volunteer nesting beach projects, or, you know, states or other foundations to turn to money for that. Many of these struggling projects outside the U.S. just don't even have access to. So, well, I'm sympathetic. I'm not that sympathetic. But it is an irony, though. It is an irony.
Yeah. No, I'm nodding my head in strong agreement to your response.
Well, the other part of this is that, you know, on the one hand, the U.S. is trying to provide some leadership in terms of the conduct of conservation programs. And, you know, so we have to also be doing good quality projects within the U.S. And if we're trying to implement, say, a hawksbill, long-term hawksbill population monitoring projects around Caribbean, and we can't even adequately fund our own projects, say at Mona Island or Buck Island, which we are doing right now, but it's a struggle, believe me. I'm Sandy on this. It's ironically a real struggle to get money for our own projects. Well, I'm, on the other hand, in my job, trying to go around and encourage other countries to establish index sites for monitoring hawksbill populations that have countries that have much less access to resource than the fairly wealthy United States. So. Yeah, there's all kinds of ironies and paradoxes in this business. But
actually, that brings up a good point. Are U.S. territories eligible?
Unfortunately, that's another. I've had Guam, people from Guam who, you know, don't have a lot of resources, asking to apply, and they can't, basically, unless they can tie it in with some larger regional project that's affecting the regional turtle population. But if you're just strictly saying, I'm going to do a nesting beach project on Guam, no, you can't. And, you know, and maybe this is, like Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands and Guam and some of the other territories that are remaining could benefit from the Marine Turtle Act if there was some slight modification in the reauthorization. I think if you opened it up to funding within the U.S., then you basically, there'd be a big suction sound, and it would undermine what the act was intended to do globally.
Right? Yeah.
So I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah. Well, I think you make a really good point that the dollars go a lot farther in developing countries than they would here.
For sure. Yeah.
It would be nice if there was a complementary act or something like that designed just for the U.S. Based projects, I think.
Well, there is. It's called the Endangered Species Act.
I mean dedicated, because, you know, there are lots of endangered species in the world, but obviously there's this international fund dedicated to specifically sea turtles, or there's one for gorillas, like you said, or elephants or rhinos. So it would be nice if there was one in the U.S. that was dedicated to specifically sea turtles.
But there is one for the state of Florida, isn't there, from the driver license?
Yeah, but the federal government I'm talking about.
All right, So we have done about 30 minutes. Before we finish up, does anybody have any last questions about the Marine Turtle Conservation Act or any of the other things? What other kind of things are you working on, Earl, besides that, or is that pretty much it?
Well,
Is that all you're doing?
Well, actually, I did have a few projects going before the inception of the Marine Turtle Act that I've been involved in Mexico and in Central America and developing in Oman. But beside that, I'm very actively involved in the Indian Ocean Southeast Asian Memorandum of Agreement for Marine Turtles and the Inter-American Sea Turtle Convention, and a few other international issues. So I also liaison extensively with our sister agency, the National Marine Fisheries Service. So I have a very exciting, inspiring. I look forward to going to work, and I don't even feel like I'm going to work. I'm doing many really fun things and exciting things, and I just would like to say to the people that happen to tune into this, send us your grant proposals, please. Even if you may not have luck the first year or two, if they're good proposals, it's going to help us build this program, and you're going to help turtle conservation indirectly, and hopefully eventually you'll get some of your own rewards for this. So please keep sending those grants in.
And when is the next deadline for proposals?
The next deadline will be November 1. We're going to 2 deadlines a year to try to allocate the money a little more evenly. First, have a deadline in November 1 for projects that are looking for funding, primarily for the nesting seasons that are beginning in April, May, going through our summer here in the Northern Hemisphere, for some species. Of course, for other species, it's the winter is the nesting period, and those we're going to have a deadline for March or April 1, I can't remember now. It's not that you can't apply anytime you want, but we're going to encourage those projects that need funding for, say, 2007 summer nesting season to apply November 1. And for those that are looking for funding in the following winter season, to apply in the second deadline. But
the decisions are made all at once, is that right? It's not a rolling decision process.
No. Although maybe we'll go to that eventually. If we get enough money, then we can just go into a rolling deadline. People can apply any time of the year, and we'll just fund it on their own merits or hold them until we have a few budgets.
Okay. Anybody have any last thoughts?
No, just great information, Earl.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Earl. Really appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure.
And I should have said at the outset that I am going to put some show notes together that will go online. We'll have links to sites that we've talked about or information that we've talked about. That will be at seaturtle.org/twist. So you can go there and you can find links to a lot of the information that we've talked about if you want to learn more. And I think that's it. We don't have anybody lined up yet for next week, so if you have any suggestions, please let us know. If you have suggestions for topics, let us know. You can do that one of two ways. You can send us an email at feedback@seaturtle.org. Or if you go to seaturtle.org/twist, down toward the bottom of the page, there is a comments link. Click on the comments link and you can post comments, give us feedback right online, or suggestions, whatever you like. That's it. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah. Okay. Great show.
All right.
We'll see.
That's it, guys.
We'll see if anybody tunes in next week.
Yeah.
Level of intimacy to require.
This is exactly the kind of talk we're going to have.
You're not recording this, you need.
I just started now. I have
got some good bloopers.
Yeah, I might have got some good bloopers.
But we're all done now. So. Good night, George.
Good night.